Blog Talk Radio.
All right, everybody. Welcome to Applause Radio Show. Thank you so much for joining us. Tonight, we have two great guests. Our first guest is Mark Dalton, the bassist from Zager and Evans. If you don't remember the band or remember the song, it's in the year 2525. Can't wait to talk to him. And our second guest is Richard Pryor Jr. Can't wait to talk to him as well. I'm excited. Sounds like a great night. But before we start, let me just say thank you to our sponsors, the Hyde Bar and Bistro in Garfield, New Jersey, Precious Memory Video in Kitnesville, Pennsylvania, and KWV Wines out of South Africa. Hi, Mark, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. I appreciate you calling. Believe it or not, we have a caller on the line already, but we're not going to take him right away. Hold on one second. Please hold, caller. Anyway, I've been dying to get you on the show because with everything that's going on nowadays, I mean, 2525 was written in the 60s, did you ever imagine this was going to possibly be the era that we're in? I mean, because it was sort of a take on how computers were going to run the world and stuff like that. I mean, do you imagine that this actually happened? I mean, like, or, you know what I mean?
It's happening a lot more quickly than we imagined, for sure.
Exactly, I know. And I also want to ask, do you think that the song gained more popularity because it was around the time of the space when they were doing the space system with the Apollo, you know, like they were trying to get into technology, the country at the time? Do you think maybe the song may have taken off because of that a little bit? I mean, other than the fact that it's a great song, you know.
Well, it was a strange time, definitely. Probably that song, had it come out a few years earlier or a few years later, it wouldn't have done nearly as well. I mean, 1969 was like a year when it seemed like everything was hitting the fan.
Right.
Not only were men walking on the moon, but Woodstock was happening.
All right.
Charlie Manson and those guys were doing bad stuff.
Yeah.
There was a whole convergence of strange things, riots in the streets, student strikes, just a lot of things going on. And I think a lot of people felt like the world was kind of coming unhinged
that year. And here you guys are, three young guys out in Lincoln, Nebraska. Oh, no, sorry, Wymore, Nebraska, Lincoln, Nebraska area. And in the middle of nowhere, really, right? I mean, and you see all this going on around you. And, like, when you started touring and everything and saw the different cities and everything, were you like, whoa, like, was everything like just like culture shock to you with this song? I mean,
well, there were actually four of us. The drummer was also from Lincoln, Nebraska.
Right.
You know, Rick Evans wrote that song in about 15 minutes.
Wow.
A friend of his had loaned him a book by Aldous Huxley called Brave New World that envisioned a world that he described in this song. He was inspired by that book, and he just sat down and wrote the song, and it really hit a nerve, I think,
in our
country.
Right. Yeah. Now, you guys are still... You still got, I know, like you said, the drummer's no longer with us, but Zager and do you guys get together and play out these days? Or
no, not at all. No,
you have your own thing going.
Yeah, I've been in Seattle since 1973, and I'm busy out here playing in a bunch of different venues. Rick actually died
yeah.
back in 2018, but we'd stayed in touch frequently by email over the years. And you know, I'd get these emails out of the blue from Rick. He had a great sense of humor, and he would send jokes out mostly to me and to his friend Gary Earle, who's a record producer down in Nashville. The three of us kind of had like an email thing going on for about a decade there until Rick passed on.
I'm curious, why was there no announcement or anything of his death? I was surprised to hear that.
Yeah, well, in his later years, Rick was kind of a hermit. He was living in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and he was kind of just burned out with the whole showbiz thing.
Right, right.
And so he was, you know, he was well-to-do from that song.
Right.
I mean, he continued collecting royalties on everything from ringtones, and it would appear in movies, and,
right.
you know, so the cash register kept going.
Well, you didn't get any writing credits on that, or...?
No.
Wow.
Actually, the drummer, Dave Troop, should have got a writing credit and would have in these days. I think in these days it's a lot clearer as to what kind of contributions people make, because Troop actually thought up the beat that song had, that kind of insistent throbbing beat.
Mm.
Troop told me what bass part to play. He told Evans, this is how the song's going to go or I'm not going, because we were heading down to Texas to record the song.
Right.
So we kind of had Rick over a barrel as far as what the arrangement was going to be like.
Oh, wow. You know, I don't mean to cut into this, but we have a caller, and I hate for them to be on hold. Do you mind if we take the call?
No, not at all.
Hold on.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, caller. Welcome to Bill Plow's radio show. Who's calling? Hello? I think we lost him. I'm sorry. So, okay. We'll get him back. I'm sure they'll call back. So now, Zager, how did he get into doing guitars? How did he get into making his own guitars? I mean, was that pretty much something you guys did out in the middle of Nebraska? I mean, you know.
No, I think he just saw a need for it. He moved back to Lincoln, you know, after the song kind of fizzled out. They did a couple more albums after that first album that we did. And then things just sort of, you know, got back to normal. And Denny went back to Lincoln, and he was teaching guitar lessons for a while.
Mm.
He had his own guitar studio. And I think he liked working with his hands and just thought, you know, I'm going to try this out. And
right.
It's been real successful from what I hear.
Yeah. I had a couple people reach out to me and tell them that they own a couple of their guitars. A few people said they owned his guitars and really loved them. And they have a great sound and a beautiful guitar. So, I know, do you own one, a Zager guitar?
I don't. I'm a bass player.
That's true. That's true. Well, you can play a little bit of guitar, too, no?
Yeah, I do.
So now you were doing psychedelic rock. How did you go into blues? Or was that always your main thing, blues?
Well, we like blues a lot. I mean, in Nebraska, you can get like these clear channel radio stations coming from all over the country, and we used to listen to the stations from the South. And so we got into blues at an early age, and the psychedelic bands that I was in were kind of like, you know, like the Yardbirds, maybe.
Mm.
They were really blues rock bands right from the get-go, and got. The more we listened to blues and the more we got into it, we just got to love it. And so I came out here in 73 and picked up with a guy named Tom McFarland, who was from the Bay Area, who was a great blues singer. And we started working together five nights a week at a bar downtown here in Seattle. And things just took off from there. I never looked back.
Right, cool. Now, during that time when the song came out, what type of music were you guys listening to in Nebraska?
Well, the drummer, Dave Troop, and I were in a band called the Liberation Blues Band, which was very popular in Nebraska and kind of the surrounding area. And but we were also helping Rick Evans out by cutting some demo singles. Rick was like writing a lot of songs at that point, and he was trying to sell them, particularly to singers in Nashville. So we helped him out by recording demo singles. So when it came time to record in the year 2525, he just naturally picked up on the two of us to help out. We went down to Odessa, Texas, and recorded it at a studio that was owned by a guitar player named Tommy Alsup, who had been the guitar player in Buddy Holly's band.
Oh, wow.
And didn't die in the airplane crash because they flipped coins to see who was going to take the plane and who was going to take the bus. That legendary story.
Right.
And Waylon Jennings was the bass player in that band.
Right.
And Tommy also played guitar. So, and he was still playing a lot. He was in Asleep at the Wheel, in fact, at the time.
Mm-hmm.
A famous Texas band. And had also played with Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys. So, it was great for us to go down there and get to meet Tommy Alsup and kind of hang out with him and some of his old-time musical buddies down there. So we had a really good time recording in his studio.
Right.
And I don't know, it was an adventure.
Wow, I can only imagine. And how old were you when this was all going on?
21.
Oh, so okay. You aren't that young. I mean, we've had some guests on that were like 14, 15. I'm like amazed that they, you know, blew up like they did in 60s at that age, you know. But
it was
the age of music, you know.
Yeah, we were seasoned professionals by that point. We'd all been playing quite a bit. And Rick Evans.
You started at 8, right? You started taking lessons at 8.
Yeah.
By 21, you surely were a professional, I was about to say.
Started my first band when I was 15, and we were making money right out of the gate.
Wow. Now, I know you didn't write the actual song with the guys, but lyrically, but do you know what made them choose the specific years? I mean, because they really jump. I mean, it's not like it goes 10, 20, 30 years. We're talking mega years here, you know, mm-hmm. millennials and stuff. So, you know why they chose those? I mean, just the lyrical content or... Did it sound it better? I mean, what do you think that was?
I'm sure it was the way it sounded. Mm. As I said, Rick wrote that song in 15 minutes. It kind of came off the top of his head. I'm sure it was like kind of boiling around inside there after he read that book. But it just sort of poured itself out on the paper. And I'm sure it went with what sounded good, how the flow went. You know, that's a lot of songwriters will tell you. The songs just come to them as a completed thing. Mm-hmm. They just flow out on the paper.
Yeah. And you also play with the Vogues and the Benders. I mean, other bands as well. I mean, those are the ones that jump out at me, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I mean, you play with many, many bands. My God.
We
started with the Starfires. And then you worked with the Exploits, the Impacts, the Vogues, Scotty Shadows, the Jacks, the Benders. And now you're still playing bass these days. With are you also, am I crazy? Did I see that you were a certified mental health case manager, or am I got the wrong Mark Dalton?
Oh, I had a long career doing that.
Really?
Working for the State Department of Social and Health Services.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if that was you or not. So you don't do that anymore.
I'm retired.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
What would you think if you had to deal with these people nowadays with all these problems we have?
Hey, they were always there.
That's true.
The problems don't change. We had a big homeless problem in Seattle the whole time I was here.
Mm.
What'd you
think of the grunge that came out of Seattle during the 90s?
Loved it.
You loved it? Yeah.
I love those guys.
I was going to say, did you take part in any of it?
I'll tell you what, we played in a place downtown Seattle called Hibble and Hides that used to start music at 10 o'clock and it would have music going till 4 in the morning.
Right.
All the bars in Seattle have to close at 2 because that's when the liquor law says you got to stop. Hibble and Hides just stopped serving liquor so we would keep playing. And all the other bands that were playing in the downtown Sea area would come over to Hibble's to hang out for those couple of hours until 4 a.m. So we were playing there a lot with this guy, Albert Collins, who was kind of a famous blues guy. He was on the West Coast at that time. So these grunge kids would come over and listen to us. And we were playing high energy blues till 4 a.m. And so I think, you know, I've heard that we were kind of an inspiration to those kids.
Oh, cool.
That they liked this high energy and intense guitar stuff that we were doing. And what I thought about the grunge kids was that they were kind of getting back to the roots of rock and roll.
Yeah,
they were funky. They were kind of edgy music. They were kids that weren't afraid to just like scream their heads off, and so I loved it.
Yeah. Now, since you went to go see them, did you play with any of them? Did you ever jump on stage and jump in?
No, I didn't. No. Mm. You know, I try to act my age.
You know what? Let's see if we can take another call, okay? We're
sure.
Having a little bit of technical difficulties, but let's work it out. Let's see. All right. Hello. Let's see. Hello, caller. Hello. No, I don't know where they are. There's somebody there. I just can't get them on the line. I don't know why.
I thought I heard something.
Yeah, I hear something, but hello? Are you on the line?
I'm not getting through somehow.
Let's see. Try that. I don't know why we can't get through to them. I apologize. So now these days you are retired, and now once you're a retired musician, you're still playing music. I mean, once you have music in you, you don't stop. So where are you playing these days? You must be out.
I'm playing more than I ever have in my life.
I bet. I figured that.
I'm juggling four different bands. Some of them are playing a lot. I'm playing with a band called Brian Lee and the Orbiters, which is a straight-ahead blues band, traditional kind of blues band. We've won the traditional blues band award for the Washington Blues Society like 5 or 6 times, I think. So we play pretty often. I play with a jazz guitar player named Chris Stevens, who's working a lot. And then I'm playing kind of a hippie festival band called Sonic Shiva that plays at electronic music festivals around. And we're like a band that can play that kind of music, only we do it live. So I'm working a lot. And, I just sort of skated out of my day job after almost 35 years.
Yeah.
I've got a pension, so I keep, buying groceries and stuff. But I'm actually making a fair amount of money playing music. I never really stopped playing music
right.
The whole time, even though I was working. We were always out there on the weekends.
Now, have you guys ever thought about doing a reunion thing? I mean, all the 60s acts are getting together, they're playing together. I mean, are you and Joe are still tight, or?
All right, here's a good story. The year that I got nominated for the Nebraska Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, for all of those bands that you mentioned, Rick Evans and Dave Troop were in a band called The Eccentrics, which was really their claim to fame. The Eccentrics were famous all over the Midwest.
Nice.
So I got a hold of Rick Evans and I said, look, let's you and me and Troop get together and play at this thing. Because they wanted bands to play at the induction ceremony. Right, and I didn't hear back from Evans. At that time, Rick Evans and Denny Zager hadn't really talked to each other for years, so we didn't think about getting in on this. So I said, look, Rick, we can get together and let's play Jimi Hendrix's song, The Wind Cries Mary. I thought that would be a really good song that
good
Evans
song.
Could sing.
Mm-hmm.
And Evans was also a really good electric guitar player.
Mm.
So I said, let's do this. You know, this will be really fun. Finally, I get this message back from Evans, and it says, Mark, when I left the state of Nebraska, I swore to God that I would never set foot in that state again, and I haven't. So
why?
I'm sorry, I'm going to pass.
But why? I don't get it.
Well, you'd have to be born and raised in Nebraska maybe to have that kind of an attitude. I don't really have that attitude, although I would never think of moving back there.
Right.
But I've been back there kind of regularly to see my friends and relatives and stuff like that. But Rick had just kind of soured on Nebraska, and so he just wouldn't do it.
Right.
So Dave Troop, the drummer, showed up at the ceremony and accepted the award on behalf of the other Eccentrics. And I was in as an individual because I played in a bunch of different bands that got to be kind of notorious.
Right, right. Do you throw around that, you know, like when people meet you, do you tell them I was with Vega and Evans and I was with this song, and do they know the song? I mean, you know, like, or do you really don't?
I the first 20 years that I lived in Seattle, I didn't mention it to anybody.
Mm.
Finally, the story got out. And, you know, people after a while started going, you know, that's really cool, man.
Right, right.
You know, all of us that were involved with that song kind of had mixed feelings about it because it really wasn't kind of in the vein of what we were doing at the time.
Right.
You know, Rick Evans, like when we were driving back to Nebraska after recording that song, Rick says to the rest of us, he said, well, we're probably going to have to be pedaling this song down on O Street, which is the main O Street in Lincoln, Nebraska. We'll get these sandwich boards and put them on, right, and go down and see if we can sell them to people on the street.
Oh,
he didn't have any confidence that it was going to be a big hit.
Oh, my God, it was a huge hit. It was number one, wasn't it? I mean,
yeah, it was number one for
right.
6 weeks in a row.
Yeah.
Sold millions of copies.
Right,
so.
I know. Oh, my God. And a lot of people redid it, too, which I didn't know. I didn't know in different countries and everything. It's so funny that other countries would take on the song, too.
I know. They're still doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some great videos on YouTube. Just put 2525 in them. You can see a bunch of different videos that people have made. There's like a Japanese anime video that goes along with the song that I really like. Got all the kind of cartoon illustrations of all this horrible stuff that's going to happen to humanity. But, so it was a surprise.
Yeah, well, definitely. And, you know, and the song, it really was ahead of its time. And it basically was like a Nostradamus type of thing. And actually, you know, I mean, in the 60s, who was talking about conceiving babies in test tubes? That didn't happen until, like, late 70s, I'd say. I mean, I wasn't born. I was born in the 60s, but I was a baby. So I don't really know what the topics were. But I know when I was older, we were talking test tube babies, you know. But I can't imagine that being discussed in the 60s. So I guess he got that from the book as well. And what's the name of the book again?
Brave New World.
Hmm.
Good book, Aldous Huxley. There were some visionary science fiction writers at that time that were kind of introducing these topics. But, you know, it hadn't really gotten addressed in rock and roll at that point.
Hmm.
Pop music hadn't really... So Evans was definitely ahead of his time in that respect.
Right, definitely.
Yeah.
And I guess today's music isn't a discussion. You don't want to talk about that, do you? You don't care. What do you think of today's music?
Well, my son's a musician.
And?
He's been quite, you know, he's toured with this guy Macklemore, who's like kind of a rapper from Seattle.
Yeah. What did your son play?
He plays keyboards.
Oh, cool. Well, he could join any band then.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody wants a keyboard player.
He's been all over the country and actually around the world with Macklemore.
Yeah, well, Macklemore is a really big band. So, Macklemore and Lewis, right? Yeah.
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 So,
wow.
So, you know, I grew up a second time with the music that's happening now. I mean, my son was listening to NWA when he was like in grade school, kind of, you know. He took me, my son and a bunch of his friends took me to a concert. You know, they said, Dad, you got to take us to this concert, you know. So I said, okay. And it was like Little Kim.
Oh, God.
And Puff Daddy.
Yeah.
People like that. And I'm sitting there going, whoa. You know, like I was totally unprepared for like the level of language, and I mean, Little Kim was like this incredible kind of stripper performer guy, and my kids, like these little boys, right, they're just sitting there
watching.
Yeah. So, you know, I had to just like adjust.
Yeah. Well, obviously you still write. Are you doing any plan on releasing any new music, or just doing the playing out on the weekends, or I don't know what days you play out, but I'm assuming the weekends.
We play out, well, just any day now, because I don't have to get up and go to work.
That's true.
But, you know, we play mostly like Thursday through Sunday. That's right. There's some good Sunday gigs around here now.
Mm.
Although Seattle is the epicenter of this coronavirus.
Oh, wow.
So the gigs that I've had booked and that my son's had booked, I mean, they're both being canceled.
Oh.
The governor prohibited public gatherings of more than 250 people for the foreseeable future. So there's not going to be any big concerts in Western Washington, no big sporting events. It's, you know, the town is like kind of locked down right now. We go out and walk the dog and just basically stay home and watch TV. You know, everybody's washing their hands all the time and using the...
Well, we should be washing our hands all the time. What the hell?
We should, yeah.
Jesus Christ, you know?
I'm hoping the summer will get here and it'll warm up and this virus is just going to dry up and blow away, but it hasn't happened yet.
Right.
So.
Well, if anybody wanted to hear you or find out more about you, Mark, where can they get information on you? What, you have a website or anything?
I do.
Okay.
I do. It's real easy to remember. I'm a bass player, and the address is markdaltonbass.com.
And that's B-A-S-S, not B-A-S-S, people.
That's right, B-A-S-S. MarkDaltonBass, all one word, .com.
Cool.
And it's got my schedule on there, and it's got some of my history, and it's got a lot of pictures, and, you know, people can catch up with me that way.
Excellent.
And there's contact info there if they want to ask me more questions or whatever.
Right. Well, maybe the guys, are you the only one out of the guys that is really, like, out there, or are they pretty much have said, I'm done, you know? Rick and
Denny's pretty much been done. He's just
making
his guitars. Dave and Rick are gone. So
I'm sorry. I meant. I'm reading. I meant you and. That's right. He just died too. Dave just died. I'm so sorry. I apologize.
Sorry. We went back for Dave's memorial, and there was like. It was a great gathering of all the old musicians that we hadn't seen for a long time.
Yeah.
So it was good, and then but really nothing happened with Rick because he, you know, his sister I think came and claimed the body, but she didn't talk to the media at all, and neither Gary Earl nor I really thought it was our place to make any kind of an announcement about it.
Right.
Because I think Rick just wanted to fade out. He didn't really want any kind of a big deal.
Well, I hope that you and Denny can somehow get in touch and get out there again, because all these bands, my favorite bands that I love, are doing it, and you should be out there too.
Unlikely. Thank you for the thought.
You never know. But
you never know.
Mark, thank you so much for joining us. It was an absolute pleasure. I appreciate it, and I wish you all the best, and I love being Facebook friends with you now, and hopefully we can remain friends, and you're more than welcome to come back anytime you like. We love having repeat customers.
Sure. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. It's been great.
Thank you. Good luck, and we wish you all the best, hon. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. So we think we have Mr. Richard Pryor on the line. However, having a few issues here with getting Mr. Pryor, so I'm going to see if I could call him myself. Richard, are you
on
the phone?
I'm actually here. Yes, I am.
Hi, honey. How are you?
I'm good.
Thank
how are you?
Thank you so much. Good. Sorry, we're having just a few technical issues tonight, and I apologize. I hope you weren't holding too long.
No, not at all.
Good. Well, thank you so much for joining us. You are a hard guy to track down, you know.
And I were
going back and forth there.
It's been a crazy year.
Well, what have you been doing that I can't get in touch with you? Tell us.
Well, other than, you know, working on, you know, my book and everything like that, they've actually adapted it. Ron Brower, who helped write it, actually they've adapted it into a screenplay, so dealing with that.
Cool.
I'm doing some
cool
readings for plays and things, and then... you know, shooting and learning lines for scripts and all that kind of stuff. So it's just been
The book is in a prior life, right?
Yes, correct.
Cool. And how long has the book been out, Rich?
The book's been out, it would be a year now.
Wow.
So March. It came out in the middle of March last year.
And it's basically what, about your growing up with dad and all that?
My life period, all the things that I've been
in general,
through. I've been through a lot of things, but, you know, he's a part of the story because, of course, he was my dad. So it's dealing with my life and what it's like being a child of a celebrity.
Right. Well, I've been dying to say this. I wish we didn't connect the way we did. I wanted to say, welcome, Richard Franklin Lennox Thomas Pryor. That's a lot. How do you fit that on? How do you fit that on a check?
No, I just go by the Franklin.
Oh, do you? You don't do Richard?
Yeah. No, well, I'd go Richard, but if I have to use middle name, it's just Franklin. So just Richard Franklin, because it's a lot of names there.
Yeah. Before I forget, how's Rain doing?
Rain's doing very well. My sister is actually running for city council in Baltimore, where she lives.
Good for her.
Yeah.
I mean, I actually, she was the only one out of your siblings that I knew growing up, you know, because she was on the, head of the class, I think it was.
Right, head of the class. Yeah,
and she was the only one I knew. But then, you know, I saw you on the internet and you're singing and you're acting and your stage presence. I was like, I got to talk to him. I got to have him on the show.
Cool.
And I wanted
to
talk about
that.
You, and if we could also, you know, talk about your father would be fantastic.
Yeah.
I'd appreciate that. So
I'm awesome, but.
Well, the two of you kind of had a little bit of a similar life in regard to kind of some tough stuff, right? I mean, he had a lot tougher than you, obviously.
Yeah, something like when you're going through life and the things you go through, things you never say you would do or never try this, never do this, and I'll never be this. You find yourself when you're going through life through the things because of the fact that you've gone through a lot when you were younger. Those things have a way of creeping up and being demons in your life.
Right.
So
well, you were young. You were young. He was. So was he. So was he.
Yeah.
You know? He was.
Yeah, exactly.
He was enjoying his career. That's what they do. You know.
Right.
That's what they did. You know. I think the celebrities have calmed down a little bit in regard to that nowadays. I mean.
Oh yeah.
You still have your stragglers that enjoy partying and getting crazy, but not many, not like it used to be.
No, not like
know?
It used to be. Definitely not like
yeah,
it used to be.
Yeah, definitely not like it used to be. I mean, yeah, it's not safe, you know?
Yeah.
You got to be careful, you know?
So. Oh, definitely.
Tell us about your role that you had where you were playing the transgender husband. What play was that?
It was called Lipstick Goes On Last. And we ran in Chicago. The play was based out of Chicago.
Right.
And by a great director named David Zack. He's an award-winning director in that area. Very prominent in the Chicago area. But it was just a play mainly about a mother who was a drunk, and she had her daughter who had a friend, and it was like the friends connecting and all those kind of things that could happen that you would see in a story how, you know, one person maybe is having an affair with somebody else and they're all connected to each other. And it was about seeing how mixed up and messed up each of their lives were, you know, going through his day-to-day life. So I actually, my character actually was dressed like a dude, but then I enjoyed cross-dressing. And I enjoyed
You were the husband. You were the
right,
husband.
Right. Right. And then I fell in love with one of the other husbands. That we had a little thing going on as well. So it was kind of like one of those mixed up things. It was a crazy play.
Right. Wow. Unbelievable. And it looked great. I mean, I saw snippets of it. It looked really good.
Yeah.
Now, are you performing now, or are you just working?
No, actually, a couple things. I'm waiting on a lady by the name of Robin Miller, Robin K. Miller. She used to be a corrections officer, and she wrote a book about, you know, the life of a corrections officer and about the things that you don't see and hear about, you know, about how some of the correction officers are not really good, they're not really nice, and the things that they do. So she's got a show now that they're working on trying to get, but it's actually going to be done. Trying to get it to where it would actually play, where it would play it on TV as a series. It's called The DOC. So I got a main role in that. So we're just waiting on when it's time to film for that. I did a reading of a play called The Innocence Project, based off the true story of Betty and Barney Hill in the early 60s, who they were a couple who lost like almost 2 hours of time when they were traveling home. And they both went to a psychiatrist who was a prominent psychiatrist in Boston, and recorded their voices, and they actually told the same story of an abduction.
Hmm.
So it's a play about that. So I have like the lead role playing Barney Hill and that. So we're just waiting on. We've done several readings. We're just waiting on to see what happens. Trying to get us to go to the Broadway, off Broadway.
Wow! Wow!
Yeah.
Now you're in California, right?
No, I'm in New York City.
Oh, you are in New York.
Uh-huh.
Okay, because
yeah.
I was going to say, if they're doing off Broadway, what are you going to do? You're going to come out here?
Yeah, no, I'm in New York.
Oh, okay. No, because your number is New York. Is your number New York?
Yeah, it's New York. Yeah.
I thought it was L.A. I'm sorry.
I
deal with a lot of phone numbers, so, my God.
Well, I could imagine.
What was I going to ask you? Do you mind if we go back to your father?
No.
Well, now, I don't know if you want to, if you don't want to talk about this, you could tell me. Now, your father starred with Paul Mooney, and you have had an experience with Paul Mooney. If you don't want to discuss this, we don't have to.
Yeah, it's a thing where I'm trying not to give credence to it, and I don't want to be in a situation where I have to say what I don't want to say.
But did he ever face charges? That's all I want to know.
No.
Okay, that's not cool. You know, that's not right.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I just was curious to know. Now, out of your father's movies, which was your favorite?
It's a film called Which Way Is Up.
Oh, that's a great one.
Yeah, when he played three people. Yeah, three characters. Yep. Yeah, that's my favorite film of his. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a great one. You know, I had no idea that he wrote, co-wrote with Mel Brooks. I had no idea.
Yeah, Blazing Saddles.
And he was actually supposed to be in Blazing Saddles, too.
Yeah, he actually wanted him. Mel Brooks wanted him, but the studios didn't want him.
Yeah, it seemed like, when I was doing my research, it seemed like he got so close to all these big parts, but then they said, oh, his mouth. And then they turned him away because of his mouth.
Well, that's not the reason why. I know for Blazing Saddles, it had nothing to do with his mouth. It had to do with that they didn't know how he was going to be as far as him, you know, being a partier and using drugs. So
I thought it was because they couldn't control what was going to come out of his mouth, even if he was known for cursing a lot.
I mean, he's known for cursing because of his stand-up, but when he wasn't doing stand-up, if he's doing a film, he's going to do what's written in the script.
His job,
you know?
Wow. And I never saw the Richard Pryor show. How old were you when that was on?
Oh, I was very, very young. That was back in the 70s. You know, so I was very young, mid-70s.
Were you ever there? Did you ever go to any of the
sets? No, I never did. I never
movies?
Went to one of the... Oh, yeah, I used to go to the movie sets all the time. I never went to the TV show before Never the Sets for that. But, yeah, I've worked on a couple of my dad's films in production and was on set of a lot of his films, yes.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that either. That's cool. But now I like Stir Crazy. That was funny. Oh, my God. That was really funny. Did you know Gene Wilder?
Gene Wilder, yes, I knew him briefly and everything. Yeah, you know, because him and my father didn't hang out or anything like that. They weren't any friends. You know, they just worked well together.
Right, they worked together. I know.
Right.
I was just to say, but did you know get to know him or any like out of all his co-stars or people he worked with, who'd you like did hang out with or thought you was the coolest?
Not really many people as far as that. I found that out as well. You know, when I worked on films and things like that. People that you're close to them after for a while, and then you start being a part of your life or what you've got to do in your life, and, you know, you don't communicate as much as you would, you know, if you worked at a regular job with somebody seeing them all the time. You pretty much do the job, and it's done, and you go on, you know.
Right.
You don't – very seldom do you see those big relationships build out of working on film work.
Right. Now, you really – how old were you when you realized your father was famous or was even a comedian? I mean, you know.
Well, I knew something was going on when I was, you know, like 6, 7, 8 or something like that. But I think when I was a young teen, when I would fly out to California, I think that's when it really hit me. And then when I would introduce him on stage, when he would do his stand-up material and
seeing
all the people that would show up, I think that's when I really knew my father.
Oh, that was nice. So you actually did the introductions when he came out?
Yeah, I sure did. It was great.
Oh, that's nice. That's nice. Wow. How old were you when you were doing that?
Probably around 12-ish, somewhere around that,
wow.
that range, 12, well, 13, 14.
I thought your father was absolutely amazing and hysterical. And, you know, even when he had his incident with the freebasing, he could still even laugh about that. I mean, when
uh-huh.
he did that joke with the match, and he
uh-huh.
said, "What is it?" And he says, "Richard Pryor running."
Yeah.
That was hysterical. That was hysterical. I mean, you know. Did you get a chance to see that show that we talked about that I said I wanted to see what your input was on it? They did it on Reels. I can't remember the name of it. It was in Behind Richard Pryor or something. You said you had really nothing to do with it.
Well, it depends
that?
On which one you took. It depends on which one.
I know.
I did one that was on Reels, and I did Omit the Logic, but the latest one that was played, like, on TV on ABC that just had, like, a month ago
That's the one.
Yeah, no, I definitely had nothing to do with that at all.
And what did you think of it when it was done?
I didn't watch it.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Well, the one I saw on Reels was really good. And, I mean, if you had something to do with it, I guess it's true to form what I saw, yes?
Yeah, it was the one on the Reels. I was actually interviewed for that one, if that's the one you're
yeah.
talking about.
I don't. I unfortunately don't remember the interview, but I'm sure I saw you. But, I did see that one a while back. But, yeah, I had mentioned to you about the one they were showing on Channel 7 or ABC and wanted to ask you what you thought of it. And that's how we started talking, actually. I was curious to get your input on it.
Had nothing to do with it. Didn't watch it. It was his wife's doing and everything like that. So, you know, none of us deal with her at all. So
right. Is it okay if I ask you what made you call your father from the Navy to tell him some news? Is it okay if I ask you that, or we go?
Well,
there
if you're talking about the lifestyle question.
Yes.
I didn't actually for that time. It was a thing of me like just trying to be who I was.
Right, of course.
You know, with everybody, every new child goes through a situation like that. It's a very difficult situation you go through because you think you're going to be rejected in life.
Absolutely.
So
yeah.
It was all those emotions that came up with that. It was a very difficult thing to do, but, you know, it was at the time when it was something I felt I had to do.
Yeah, but I just found it, you know, you were in the Navy, and at the time, mm-hmm. no one would think that someone in the Navy would be gay at that time, you know. And then for you, why did you wait? Why would you wait till you're in the Navy to tell?
Okay, it goes upon how the person feels.
Yeah, of course. Like the time
someone,
is right.
Yeah,
right.
So you can't tell somebody why did you wait to do this. It's a thing of like, when it was the best time for yourself. And the Navy was totally opposite of what you're saying. There were a lot of gay people in the Navy.
I didn't know that. Just like there are
in every branch of the military. It was just a period of time when you couldn't talk about it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That's what I mean. And that's what I'm saying. Like, at that time, it wasn't common knowledge to people. And especially being in the Navy, it wasn't common knowledge that people didn't know that there was so many gay or bisexual or whatever in the Navy or any military service, like you said. So,
but the fact that also it wasn't a thing of affecting the Navy because the Navy didn't know. It was a thing of me telling my father. So just because I told my father doesn't mean that the military knew.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah.
Was he surprised or no?
No. He just told me he loved me, you know.
That's good. Excellent. I'm happy to hear that for sure. So now, right now, you're in New York, and you are you hiding from Corona, or are you going out into the clubs or the theater?
No, I go out. I'm actually going on a flight tomorrow. So
no kidding.
You know, as long as I do what I do, you know, like I've always washed my hands with soap and water. So I've always done that, so it's not a thing, you know, and I keep my hand sanitizer with me, so I'm not concerned about any of that.
Yeah. No, but are they canceling anything over there in Broadway or not?
I haven't heard anything of that yet. I know I just saw where Chicago canceled their St. Patrick's Day parade, which is huge.
I didn't hear that one.
That's huge in Chicago. So a lot of things I call schools, and I have a sister who's a professor at Smith College, and they've, you know, closed down the rest of the year. Everything's done online now for the rest of the school year.
Wow.
Yeah, so a lot of universities and everything are being impacted by
They're closed for the rest of the year?
Yeah, they're closing, yeah.
Oh, my God.
For the rest
God.
Of the rest Jeez. Of the semester, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to go off track, but I just think that they're blowing this way out of proportion. Like you said, to wash your hands like you're supposed
yeah,
to.
Yeah, yeah.
And if someone's sick, you don't go near them like you would normally
yeah,
do.
Course.
You're not going to want somebody hacking on you all the time, you know, blowing their nose, sneezing, or coughing all over you, you know. So,
mm-hmm.
And another thing about the subways, it's like you should have been doing that all along, cleaning them like that, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. Okay, so now back to you, sir. Now, you are, when do you start realizing that you want to be an entertainer?
I've always been like this. I've always. It's always been in me. It's always been in my system.
Now, out of all the siblings, it's just you and Rain that are entertainers, or is everybody?
No, I have a younger brother who's an entertainer too. He does stand up.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Not like your father, I'm sure, but you know, no one will ever be like your father.
Oh no, that's not even possible.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. No one could ever do that. I mean, he's who he is, and, you know, no one could ever take that away from him, that's for sure. But so now you're going back where? To L.A., you said?
No, I'm going on a trip. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe you're going to L.A. to do something special.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
But, yeah, you are a hard guy to track down. I want to know why. What are you doing so much that I can't get you?
I'm not sure. Well, you have to look at as far as you contacted me. If you're contacting me through Messenger, I don't get notifications on Messenger, so I have no idea if I have a message unless I'm on Facebook. And then when I'm on Facebook with my messages, I usually have like 20 or 30 messages. So it's just very easy to get lost in the shuffle.
Exactly. I know I get a lot of them too, where if I don't answer them right away, they move to the bottom, and then I totally forget about them because there's so many popping in, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely hear you on that, that's for sure. My God. But now I know you're a singer. Have you ever, do you write music, write your own songs, or have you ever done?
No, I don't write right now and everything. That's something I want to actually do. I've always been like poetry and different things of that nature. So it wouldn't be extremely difficult, you know, to do that, but it would be something, it is something that I would like to do though.
How long did it take you to write the book?
We worked on the book for, I believe, 9 months, I believe it was. Yeah.
And did you had family contribute or just
anyone who was in my life, I contacted as far as like anything that could help me out, things that I wouldn't remember or anything of that nature.
Right.
I could, you know, make sure it was cohesive.
Right. I have to pick it up. I have to check it out. I'm sure it's fantastic. I would love to read it. So now where can people get your book in
they
a prior life?
They can get the book. They can go to Amazon or to the actual the publishers, which are Bear Manor Media, B-E-A-R, manormedia.com.
Mm-hmm.
You can do it that way. Or you can check out going through inapriorlife.com. If people want an actual autographed signed copy, they can actually purchase one through me. And I'll receive the book, sign them, and send them out as well. So I have no problem signing books if people want to. They will just have to send them to me if they do have the books.
Yeah. Have you ever participated in the Chiller Theaters or autograph signings like the?
No, I was actually supposed to be a part of it last October. But something scheduling, I can't remember what it was. If something was scheduling where it wouldn't work out. Yeah.
Oh, they have one in April, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
No, it's too soon. There's not enough time for that. I need a few months ahead of time.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think you'd be fabulous there. People would love to see you and meet you and get your book.
You.
And, you know, but, if you have anything more you want to add for folks to find out where they can get in touch with you or anything where they can expect to see you.
Yeah, well, they can get in touch with me, like I said, my website, inapriorlife.com, or they can check me on social media under Richard Pryor Jr. on Twitter, Instagram, and also on Facebook.
Good. I'm hoping that the book does become, would you say, a movie or
yes,
or
a film,
TV?
Yes. Yeah.
That I hope it does. And if it does, you got to come back and let us know so we can let people know.
Definitely. Thank
that
you
it's
so
coming
much.
Out.
I appreciate it. I appreciate
yeah.
it. Thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you. I mean, I appreciate you calling. And, you know, Richard Franklin, Lennox, Thomas Pryor, you are the bomb. Thank you so much. You're fabulous.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us. And all the best to you. Safe trip and stay clean over there in the city.
Okay.
And it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much, Richard.
Take care. Thank you so much. You too. Bye-bye.
All right, honey. Bye-bye. Well, thank you so much, everybody. We had Mark Dalton tonight. From Zager and Evans, he's the bassist. They did in the year 2525. Very nice guy. I enjoyed speaking with him, for sure. And Richard was just wonderful. And he looks like his dad. He actually does. And like he said, I mean, if I was him, I wouldn't even attempt to do comedy because it's like, how do you? You'd be compared. You would just be compared to your father. I mean, you can't compare to Richard Pryor. So I mean, nobody has ever come close to touching Richard Pryor. So anyway, we're going to end early tonight. So I just want to say thank you to our guests, Mark Dalton from Zager and Evans, Mr. Richard Pryor Jr. He's a great entertainer, actor, writer. Check out his book, In a Pryor Life, and it's coming out in a movie very soon. I can't wait to see it or get the book. And thank you to our sponsors, The Hive Bar and Bistro in Garfield, New Jersey, Precious Memory Video in Kentnersville, Pennsylvania, KWV Wines in South Africa, and I want to say who we have coming up on our next show. Let me see. I never have the calendar handy. I'm ridiculous. We have, on the 15th, Sunday, we have one of the guys from The Romantics, and also Alyssa Farina Maynard, I believe, and they are talking about an Earth Day celebration, and we may actually have Sophie B. Hawkins give us a call in to discuss it because she's taking part in the festival. So that's Sunday. Once I get more information, I'll have it for you. Right now, that's all I have, but thank you all so much. It's been a pleasure. We appreciate you listening, and our callers, we apologize that we couldn't get to you. We look forward to hearing from you next time. Have a good night, all. Thank you so much. Thanks for listening to Applause Radio Show. Good night, all. Bye-bye.